Chapter 20. The Council of Hera. The fortress of Hera had changed greatly since Gilliman's time. The walls had grown outwards, swallowing parts of Magna Macrag Civitas below it and the Hera's Crown Mountains behind it. To the west, it had spread as far as Hera's Falls. Their foaming rush had exchanged natural beauty for architectural elegance. Where once water had thundered down a steep natural gorge, now it was constrained in a vertical channel of marbled stone. Slippery rocks were replaced with tall statues, the irregular plunge pool by a square lake edged with greened bronze. The cliffs had been carved back, statues stood in their stead and shrines in stacked clusters. The city was different too. Flat land was at a premium on mountainous Macrag. Like a displaced nation, what Magna Macrag Civitas had lost to the fortress of Hera's encroachment, it had taken from its neighbour. The seafront was over a kilometre further out than it had been 10,000 years ago, and beyond its edge, the Faramis Ocean was clustered with floating habitats. Both fortress and city had lost much of what Gilliman remembered to the vagaries of war. Ultramar had been invaded many times while he slept, and as the capital world, Macrag had been targeted over and again. Tyranids, orcs, and the minions of chaos had all left their mark. The grand triumphal arches of the Great Crusade had gone, blasted down in one war or another, and lesser monuments had taken their place. History had a great inertia, and the layout of the streets had resisted change, but every attack had swept away another part of the past in piecemeal destruction. Pale shadows in marble had supplanted old glories. There were elements that had survived. The Library of Ptolemy was one, and the Temple of Correction another. Other landmarks had been rebuilt several times. One remaining feature was the Plaza of Attendance, a vast space like an inverted ziggurat stamped into the fortress of Hera's rampart plateau. The walls had advanced from the plaza, leaving it some way from the edge where before it had stood at the brink of man-made cliffs. The side nearest the city, once open, was now walled with a faceless armoury. The halls at the eastern end, where for a brief period the Primarch Sanguinius had sat as emperor, were long ago demolished. But the plaza remained, and it was upon this familiar ground that Rabute Gilliman elected to land. It was a windy night and wet. Every ultramarine on Macrag was upon the terraces of the plaza, as were hundreds of dignitaries from many of the Segmentum's worlds. The humans shivered in vicious, squalling gusts that lifted ceremonial robes and exposed bodies to the cold. The space marines were still as statues, their armour running with rain. Banners waved damply. Emblems were secrets in the dark. From the city, celebratory fireworks struggled up into the downpour and searchbeams shone, lighting up the night in a glorious display of colours and turning the beating rain into falling jewels. Snatches of martial music came wavering through the storm. All eyes were on the sky. Lightning flashed, lighting the clouds from within. Thunder rumbled. More lightning burst, striking the tallest spires of the fortress. Underground engines whined as they absorbed the unlooked-for power, the humans glancing nervously upwards at gathering rods glowing with heat. Through the wind, the roar of a landing cycle made itself known, fading in and out of Macrag's thunder. Suddenly, the Primarch's craft was there, emerging from the driving rain, a Thunderhawk gunship chased with gold and heavily decorated with painted battle scenes. Floodlights snapped on beneath it, and the ship came down in a pool of its own radiance at the centre of the Plaza of Attendance. A clarion blew sonorously. Cyber cherubs bearing silver instruments and banners flew out of access tunnels, were buffeted by the wind, then recovered and flew over the Thunderhawk, where they struggled to stay in place as they proclaimed the arrival of the Primarch.
"Lord Gilliman! Lord Gilliman! Master of Ultramar! Lord High Commander of the Imperium, son of the Emperor, Imperial Regent, Lord Gilliman."
The door slammed down, and out strode Rabute Gilliman. With him were five Adeptus Custodes, two high-ranking Sisters of Silence, 10 of the Victrix Guard, Captain Sicarius, Captain Ventress, and, lost in the shadow of so many mighty warriors, 6 of his most important civilian aides, a tall Primaris space marine following behind them. A human priest in simple robes came out last. He was a man so slight he might have slipped between the cracks of the plaza's worn pavement. The Primarch came to a halt and addressed his people.
"I have returned," he said.
Only that. Marnius Kalgar walked down a sodden carpet to meet his master. The empty presence of the silent sisterhood dragged at his soul, but he ignored it. Behind him marched Space Marines carrying the banners of all 10 Ultramarine companies, Andron Ney at their head, proudly bearing the chapter standard. Gilliman halted. Kalgar knelt and bowed his head.
"My lord,"
he said, speaking loudly over the rising wind,
"we rejoice to see you home again." "Rise, Lord Defender," said Gilliman.
Kalgar raised his face. He wore no helmet. Rain streamed off grey hair and around his bionic eye. He got to his feet, and he and Gilliman clasped their huge gauntlets together. Gilliman looked upon the chapter master with the genuine affection of a father for his son.
"We can only apologize for the weather," said Kalgar. "And I can only apologize for the lateness of the hour," said Gilliman. "I desired to speak with you all as quickly as I could." He looked upwards. "Fear not the storm. This is a cleansing rain, and all McCrag's moods are to be treasured."
He returned his gaze to Kalgar's face.
"Ultramar is under threat, and there is much we must do. I believe you know most of my followers here. These others are Sister Commander Bellus and Sister Commander Afany of the Sisters of Silence."
The two women bowed, their proud topknots straggling in the rain, streaks of water running over their shaved scalps.
"And Tribune Maldivar Colquan of the Hieratikoi leads this delegation from the Adeptus Custodes."
Kalgar bowed.
"It is an honor to stand before someone who personally serves the Emperor. I serve whether I am away from the Imperial Palace or within it," said the Tribune,
a retort to an insult that had not been delivered. His voice was unfriendly through his voxmeter.
"This is Captain Decimus Felix, my equerry."
The Primarch indicated the tall Primaris Space Marine. He wore the badges of an Ultramarine's captain, though he had no company colours on his pauldron rims. Kalgar would have been shocked if a chapter master had added an extra officer to the chapter like this, in direct contravention of the Codex Astartes, but Gilliman was the Primarch and could do as he pleased. Gilliman proceeded to introduce his retinue of human aides and potentates, finally indicating the priest.
"And this is Militant Apostolic Matthew. He is newly appointed to the role. The incumbent died not long ago," explained Gilliman.
"Chapter Master," said the priest. He blinked rain from the corners of his eyes and smiled.
"The blessings of the Emperor be upon you."
"Militant Apostolic," said Kalgar.
It was curious to Kalgar that Gilliman should allow himself to be accompanied by a priest. The Primarch had kept his first Militant Apostolic as distant from himself as he could. As much as he disapproved of it, the Primarch had comprehended the power of the Adeptus Ministerium soon after he awoke, and the office of Militant Apostolic was a recognition of their influence, but the Primarch's acceptance had gone no further than that. He had mistrusted the Ecclesiarchy from the beginning. So Militant Apostolic Matthew's presence was a surprise. Maybe the Primarch had come to accept the Imperium's priests a little more while he had been crusading. A century was a long time.
"Is the hall prepared?"
asked Gilliman.
"It is, my lord. We await your counsel. We have refreshments, if you would prefer to eat first." "Let us be about the meeting. Feasting must wait. I cannot afford to be away from the fleet long."
More engines screamed in the storm. All around the plaza, thunderhawks descended, and out came all of Gilliman's lords of war.
"The others are here," said the Primarch. "We are ready. Let us begin."
The Strategia Ultima was insufficiently sized to hold all the delegates, and so the edification had been arranged in the Hall of Maxellus, named for the 21st chapter master of the Ultramarines. The cold, damp smell of the outdoors came steaming off the assembled host of politicians and warriors. Huge heating coils hanging from arches did their best to warm the company, but succeeded mainly in raising an interior fog that ran wet on the stonework. A tall statue of Maxellus at the end of the hall looked on sternly, if benignly. He had been renowned for his wisdom. Emperor alone knew what he would have made of Gilliman's return and the changes that had befallen the Imperium since his day. Maxellus had lived in a time roughly halfway between Gilliman's death and rebirth. Both the 32nd and 41st millennia would be unrecognizable to him. Gilliman was afforded the place of honor. A massive bronze chair had been taken from the museum vaults deep under the fortress of Hera and brought forth for his use. Though Khalgar had seen the Primarch in stasis and was thus aware of how physically large he was, the Primarch's artifacts had always seemed bigger somehow than the being they were made for, as if sized for a titan from a greater age. They were sacred relics all, revered by successive generations of Ultramarines. The Ultramarines did not pray to their Primarch, nor venerate him in an overtly religious way. They did not believe either the Emperor or his son divine, but an aura of holiness clung to his effects nonetheless, and it had been the habit of many chapter masters to meditate in the museum vaults, looking for inspiration from the things that had known the touch of their gene-sire. To the Primarch, the throne was just another piece of furniture, a possession reclaimed as Ultramar was. He used it unthinkingly. Even now he was back, his casual attitude toward these ancient relics, although they were his, offended something in Khalgar. It was a ridiculous notion. Present in the hall were the upper echelons of the Imperial command structure within Ultramar, which comprised the Ultramarines' upper leadership, the chapter masters of the Howling Griffins, the Nova Marines, and the Genesis and Aurora chapters, as well as the first captain of the Sons of Aura and the third captain of the Mortifactors. The Inquisition were there, as were other, even more secretive organizations. By Lithocast, the chapter masters of the Silver Eagles and the Libators were also in attendance. News had come that the White Scars were en route in force. Elements of 24 other chapters were either on their way or present in Ultramar. These smaller forces were of varied strengths, ranging from a single squad to a company in size, and they had elected 8 further captains from among their total number to speak for them at the council. Ultramar's knightly houses were also well represented, as were its forge worlds, navy and Astra Militarum forces. Gilliman had brought numerous groups with him from the Indomitus Crusade, including the heads of various Primaris chapters founded at Raucus, as well as all his other military leaders, who all had their own spokesmen and advisers. Maldivar Colquhoun sat at Gilliman's left hand, Khalgar at his right. The military leaders occupied the first 3 tiers of seats around the council table. There were several hundred, all told, as varied a gathering, but not quite as grand as there had been at the Triumph of Raucus. In the remainder of the seats were diplomats speaking for the governments of dozens of worlds from Ultramar and Greater Ultramar. A human-sized table, long enough to run the length of the gathering, had been set up down the middle. It was largely symbolic, for there were far too many bodies in the room for anyone to make use of it. Gilliman had expressly ordered that no hololiths or other data projection devices be present. Instead, the table was heaped with ancient tomes and maps, symbols of obligation assumed long defunct by many of the dignitaries present. Khalgar thought Gilliman wished to be free of distraction. Less charitably, he thought his gene father wanted to ensure that he was the sole source of knowledge in the room. Ever since he had returned from death, Rabute Gilliman had been exerting his authority in a way that Khalgar had never truly considered before. As chapter master of the Ultramarines, Khalgar was no stranger to power, and had, on occasion, had need for the application of coercion and subterfuge to ensure smooth running of the realm. But it was not his realm any more, and he felt a modicum of disappointment that Rabute Gilliman had to use such tricks, that the Primarch seemed so autocratic. Of course, Khalgar was an autocrat too, a minor emperor in all but name. That he accepted, though it was a burden to have to be so. He had hoped for better from the Primarch. Although in his genius, Rabute Gilliman excelled at everything Khalgar could imagine, in other ways, he was a world away from the idealized figure Khalgar had imagined all his life. Autocracy was the natural order of human society. There was a leader and the rest followed. So it had always been. The Imperium was predicated on the preservation of this natural hierarchy. The disappointment, then, stemmed not from the fact that Gilliman was capable of such behaviour, and indeed seemed completely at ease with it, but that it was necessary he should have to exert his right to his power. Khalgar had run the theoreticals and practicals of the Primarch's awakening through his head many times before Gilliman had come back to them for real. It was indulgent, wishful thinking, daydreaming even. But who did not wish for a saviour in times of need? Marnius Khalgar, who was looked to as a saviour by billions of people, had needed his own idols to put faith in. When he had formulated his own versions of Gilliman's miraculous return, as he was sure every Ultramarine's chaptermaster since the first had also done, he had not conceived of events playing out as they actually had. He had not foreseen the resistance to the Primarch's rule. He had naively expected a Primarch to be able to overcome the sheer inertia of Imperial government by dint of his presence. The Primarch would return, and all men would fall into line and obey him unquestioningly. They would march together to conquer the galaxy, putting the old enemy to the sword and driving out the Xenos. It had not worked so simply. There was dissension, different interpretations of the Primarch's edicts, sometimes willful, and there was disbelief and suspicion. Gilliman's rebirth had caused great rejoicing among the populace, but less so among those leaders who risked losing their influence to his rule. Khalgar had relied a great deal on the civilian leaders of Ultramar and beyond. Rabute Gilliman should not need to. Khalgar had more faith than ever in his Primarch. To see him living and breathing among them brought a sense of wonder he had never thought to experience as a space marine. It had, to some extent, reinvigorated the sense of his own humanity. But the actions of some people in the face of the Primarch's return meant he had less faith than ever in his fellow man. Humanity's short-sightedness and selfishness disgusted him. Gilliman stood, banishing Khalgar's train of thought.
"My lords, my generals, my countrymen," said the Primarch. "Fellow Imperial citizens, fellow warriors of many worlds, I bid you welcome to this conclave today at the heart of Ultramar."
Gilliman's voice rang strong and clear off the stone of the hall. To every man and woman present in the assembly, it was as if he spoke to them personally. Gilliman commanded attention like no other could. His words invited no disagreement. He was forceful and strong, while appearing the epitome of reason. Marnius Khalgar was among the most powerful men in all the Imperium, and yet awe entered him as he imagined a time when 18 of these beings had travelled the stars. Being in a room with more than one must have struck men dumb.
"I have summoned you here to discuss the cleansing of Ultramar of my brother's forces," the Primarch said. "The Indomitus Crusade is done. As of now, a portion of the fleets that constituted it have returned here for a time. I have come to your aid. When I depart, this realm will be better defended, better organized, and more resilient than it has been for many generations."
Khalgar felt the remarks were directed at him.
"I'm saddened that those worlds attacked or overrun within our sphere of influence remain without help, while the war grinds on here, seemingly without resolution," Gilliman continued.
He gave the assembly a grave stare. Each person there felt their failings exposed by his regard, and none more so than Marnius Khalgar. Failure was a new sensation to him, but he was becoming intimate with it. Under the gaze of the Primarch, he realized that his failures stretched far back in time. The realization robbed the glory from all his successes.
"In the days of the Great Crusade, the worlds and realms associated with each legion provided a solid base for their operations and a link to the greater whole of the Imperium.
Most were paragons to be aspired to by other worlds, models of good governance and a promise of the peace that would come to compliant worlds. Ultramar was the very best. It was rightly lauded the length and breadth of the galaxy for its fairness, a just place where every citizen could live free of harm.
Gilliman got up from his chair and unrolled a star map upon the table. He smoothed it gently with his armored hands and stared at it a moment.
I have read many histories. I recognize and am grateful that Ultramar has continued in the role I intended since the time of my death. I am proud with all that you have done to maintain the traditions of justice this realm represents in an often cruel galaxy. I am thankful for the preservation of the freedoms enjoyed by its people. Circumscribed by the grim state of affairs we find ourselves in, as these admirable characteristics may be, Ultramar still remains an example to every other system in the Imperium.
He took a deep breath and rested his fists upon the chart. Kalgar looked past the armored hands. The legend on the map read Ultramar, but it was not the realm as he recognized it. It looked to include all the original systems of the 500 worlds and more besides. The territory was divided into 5 distinct colored blocks.
However, said the Primarch,
and a touch of steel entered his voice,
I should have done better. By reducing Ultramar to a size that could be protected effectively by one chapter, while the Ultramarines fulfilled their many obligations elsewhere, I reduced Ultramar's effectiveness as an example and as a bastion.
He looked up, a sincere look on his face.
I was mistaken.
Silence greeted these words. To most of the people in the room, he was effectively a god, and gods did not make mistakes.
Furthermore, my command, a century ago, that all treaties of independence were to be immediately rescinded and the ancient 500 worlds reincorporated into this realm, has not been fully enacted. The efforts to reconstitute Greater Ultramar, that is, the ancient 500 worlds, have not proceeded as well as I would have liked. I am angry with those Imperial commanders who will not submit to Ultramar's rule. I am disappointed with those commanders that pay lip service to my command, yet continue to put their own interests above those of greater humanity. Ultramar appears to be coming back into its original form, but it is a sham.
Several representatives of certain worlds looked very uncomfortable. Gilliman pointed an armored finger at the star chart.
This is my vision for Greater Ultramar. It will be put into effect immediately. As I cannot rely on the goodwill of local government to do my bidding, I am, of today, reinstating the ancient offices of the Tetrarchy. 4 noble members of the Adeptus Astartes, whom I have chosen as much for their acumen as statesmen as for their abilities as warriors, will be installed as sector commanders to oversee the reorganization of this realm along lines that I, and I alone, shall decree. They will be provided with all authority to pursue my aims as they see fit, whether diplomatically or militarily.
He let the threat hang on the air.
They will furthermore be entrusted with the defense of these sectors, and when peace comes, with their rebuilding and further development.
The people waited their Primarch's word as to who would rule over them. He gave the map his full attention.
Under my rule, the Tetrarchs govern from the worlds of Ajax, Occluder, Saramanth, and Connor. Saramanth was devastated some time ago, I understand, while Ajax has diminished in relative importance to the systems around it and is currently occupied by the enemy. The seats of the Tetrarchs were established early in Ultramar's expansion, and Ajax and Connor are both proximate to the capital world. In recognition of these changes in circumstance, I will establish the new Tetrarchy upon the following worlds. Connor will accept a Tetrarch as its lord again.
Despite its nearness to Macragge, the situation at Espandor demonstrates that a dedicated defensive strategy must be formulated to guard the northern reaches against further incursions from the Scourge Stars, and eventually to push out and cleanse those systems of the Plague God's followers. To this role, I appoint Severus Agamon, first captain of the Ultramarines and regent of Ultramar.
Agamon stood and knelt. My lord, he said, you do me great honour.
You will retain your rank and position within the chapter, Tetrarch, though your new duties will be onerous, said the Primarch. Rise, Tetrarch of Connor, and take your place among the highest of lords.
Agamon returned to his seat, his bearing radiating new determination.
The other worlds that will bear this responsibility are as follows. Andamung shall be the base of the second Tetrarch, with responsibility over the southern reach. To this role, I appoint Second Captain Portan of the Genesis chapter.
Portan stood, his red armour dark in the hall. He held up his hands in confusion. My lord, what have I done to deserve this honour? Do you not wish to appoint your own ultramarines to these positions? I am overwhelmed.
I have studied chapter records of serving space marines among all of my sons, not only those of the ultramarines, said Gilliman. I have selected my tetrarchs according to their ability, no matter their origin. I call upon those who are suitable for the role, without favour to my own chapter over others. You who have been chosen are worthy in my estimation. Do not forget that although you wear red and carry another chapter's name, you too bear my gene code. That is all that matters to me. Your efforts in rebuilding the Diamat cluster 4 centuries ago suggest you have all the qualities the position requires.
My lord, thank you, said Portan.
You will also retain your title as captain, though I recommend Chapter Master Irloyd promote another to captain your company. The strictures of the Codex shall be waived in this instance.
As you command, so it shall be, said the Genesis Chapter Master.
Protoss in the West will take the third Tetrarch. To this role, I have assigned Captain Balthus of the Doom Eagles. I have confirmation that he has been released by his chapter and is making his way to Macragge.
Gilliman pressed his finger at the edge of the map. There, his new Ultramar bowed out in a long curving tail towards the eastern fringe, taking in many planets that had not known Macragge's rule for long ages.
That leaves the Eastern Marches. This area, under the Sotharan League, remained politically unified until recently, but since the fall of Sotha itself to the Tyranids, the League has been without proper guidance, and I hear troubling reports regarding its efficiency. This will change. Vespastor, 3 light-years from Sotha, is designated the new seat of authority there, and its Tetrarch will rule over the Sotharan League and the Eastern Shield Worlds besides.
Gilliman looked behind him at his equerry.
Captain Felix, Primaris Ultramarine, will take command.
Felix, who was standing to the right of the Primarch's throne, looked thunderstruck.
My lord, I am not qualified, blurted the equerry.
You are qualified because I say you are qualified, said Gilliman, matter-of-factly. I have been testing you ever since your records were brought to my attention. Why do you think I inducted you fully into the Ultramarines from my unnumbered sons? I saw your potential a long time ago, Felix. I have been training you for this role. You have not disappointed me. I need a Primaris Tetrarch. All the Space Marines in the Eastern Quadrant of Ultramar will be of the Primaris type, and many others throughout Ultramar also. I cannot afford any dissension between the 2 generations of Space Marines.
Gilliman surveyed the room, looking between the differing sorts of space marine.
You may protest that this will never happen, he continued. Archmagos Call can assure me that you are made to be loyal. You of the older type may cite your records of sacrifice and devotion,
but I know the souls of men. I have heard protestations of loyalty before, and witnessed unintended slights burn them to ash. Where there is difference, there is space for envy, and envy leads to conflict. I will have none of it. Three of the four Tetrarchs will be Space Marines of the existing type. You will accept this offer, Felix. The books must be balanced. 86 worlds will be yours. Some of them are lost, and you will require all the arts I have taught you to recover them. It shall fall to you, as Tetrarch of Vespastor, to govern them all for the good of their peoples, and to be a spokesman for the Primaris Space Marines upon the Council of Greater Ultramar. All of you Tetrarchs have similar burdens.
My lord.
Felix fell to his knees, his armor banging loudly on the stone.
You, Marnius Kalgar,
said Gilliman, looking to the Ultramarines chaptermaster, will continue to rule the central worlds, with the exception of those in the systems of Connor, Viridia, and Espandor, which shall fall under the remit of the first Tetrarch. In this way, Ultramar will be divided into five parts. Gilliman's support of him was sincere enough, but Kalgar saw a scolding behind it. At that moment, the emissary from Occluder spoke up. He was angered both by his planet being passed over for the Tetrarchy and because it should be reincorporated in the first place.
My lord, what do you mean that many of the warriors will be Primaris Space Marines? He asked.
A glance from the Primarch had him hurriedly sitting down.
My concerns that a single chapter could not protect the 500 worlds remain valid, said Gilliman. I have therefore decided to station 8 new chapters of Space Marines, created recently at Raucus, within the bounds of Greater Ultramar. Along with the Ultramarines and the Scythes of the Emperor, whose territories fall within the 4th Tetra, there will be, henceforth, 10 full chapters to defend this realm.
This provoked a noisy reaction. Gilliman ignored it and carried on.
Work will be immediately undertaken to rebuild the Scythes of the Emperor with Primaris Space Marines. They will have responsibility for protection of what is currently the Sotharan League. Here, at Callimachus, we shall base the Avenging Suns chapter, and at Howe's Bridge, the Praetors of Ultramar shall have their home.
The murmuring broke out into audible protests.
You would have your own legion, said a female diplomat. My lord, what is your intention?
You say I have a legion,
said Gilliman, his tone dangerously low,
when I myself expressly forbid their formation or use.
The woman had a choice to either sit down or to press forward. Bravely, she chose the latter.
Your 9 divisions of the unnumbered suns were said to be a legion.
They were not, said Gilliman. We deal with semantics. The unnumbered suns were organized into chapters, as are the new defenders of Ultramar.
He swept his steely gaze across the crowd again.
Listen to me. My intention is to save your lives and the Imperium. Put aside your selfish concerns. Negate the disappointment I have felt in common humanity since awakening. Show me that my hopes for our species were not unfounded. Impress me with your wisdom.
What about the imperial governors? Said another diplomat. What will happen to those of worlds who take tetrarchs?
Some of them are loyal, added another. They willingly rejoined the 500 worlds, and now you will remove them and replace them with Adeptus Astartes?
Chatter from among the human contingent in the room swelled in volume. The Space Marines remained silent.
My lord, said Herodian, the son of the Hierarch of Callimachus, the galaxy has changed since your time. The worlds of Space Marine chapters are often of low worth to the Adeptus Terra. Their tithe grades are set to null. Death worlds and the like, they are recruiting grounds only. Callimachus is a well-developed planet,
Housebridge, though lesser in importance and population, is no backwater either. Gilliman was not swayed by the young man's practiced tone.
I am changing things, he said, and his eyes became cold and hard as cometary ice. The chapters stationed throughout Ultramar will be tasked primarily with the realm's defence. Callimachus and Housebridge will be governed by their chapter masters, as will all other worlds where chapters will be stationed. Do not mistake me. There will be a need for civilian governors, just as there is here on Macrag. The existing planetary governors will be given the opportunity to retire after a period of 10 years. During the handover period, they will be commanded to work with their successors to handle the transition. Once completed, their heirs shall be offered the opportunity to serve Ultramar as the administrators of those worlds. They will rule still.
They will not be commanders, said Herodian. We have served the Imperium faithfully for 3,000 years. Is this to be our reward? My father's title was bestowed by the Emperor himself.
The title, said Gilliman, was bestowed by the High Lords of Terra, who were speaking on behalf of the Emperor. I am not speaking on behalf of the Emperor. I am speaking with his full and absolute authority. Unlike the High Lords, I have recently conversed with him. This is an offer I advise you not to refuse, Herodian.
Many representatives began shouting then, their questions flying at the Primarch. Their own power threatened, they seemed to lose a little of their fear of him.
Power is corrosive, thought Khalgar. It erodes respect. It erodes common sense.
The delegate's reaction strengthened his conviction that what Gilliman was doing was right.
My people, the Primarch said.
He stood upright.
My captains, my sons, my loyal citizens, you do not understand. These changes will benefit us all, and in time will aid the Imperium. I intend to make Ultramar a model of what the Imperium can be. Look beyond your own borders. You will see our empire is crumbling. I will shore up the walls and make it great again. With the 500 worlds secure, we shall become a beacon of reason and hope. From here, the reconquest of the galaxy can begin.
You do not intend to remain, then,
said Alvaro, chapter master of the Howling Griffins.
No, my son, not forever, said Gilliman.
He turned his face upon Marnius Khalgar. Khalgar struggled to hold eye contact.
The task of presiding over all the Tetrarchs, I leave to you, Master Khalgar. You remain Lord Defender of Greater Ultramar. You are the ruler here, as you always were. Do not judge yourself by my standards. I am a Primarch. You are not. I must lend you the weight of my authority and the warriors to keep Ultramar safe. The Imperium needs Ultramar. But it also needs me. I cannot remain here, but I will leave you in a position of greater strength when I leave. We have lost many warriors here, and 3 of the realm's 6 star forts. I will let my attention linger a little on our home, until I am satisfied.
Another subtle rebuke cloaked in kind words. Khalgar bowed his head. Gilliman should not need to do this. Khalgar should have managed the realm himself. Having the Primarch intervene was humiliating.
As you command, my lord, said Khalgar. And now, to the war,
said Gilliman.
My brother retreated from Macrag at the first sign of my ships. The siege of Ardium is almost over. I will return there to conclude its relief when we are done here. After the situation is stabilized in the home system, we will counter the actions of the 3 enemies who dare to invade our realm. We must attack on every front, even if it means defeat within certain theaters. Mortarian's forces must be prevented from moving to reinforce themselves. They must all be occupied. Cut them off and cut them into pieces,
said Quintus Carmagan, third captain of the Knights Cerulean.
Only you could do this, my lord!
My preference is to unite and lead, said Gilliman grimly. But where I turn from peace to war, I shall divide and conquer.
He tapped the map.
I shall run my brother down, and I shall kill him for all the evil he has done. If I could slay him 100 times, I would. No suffering is too great for his crimes, the first and greatest of which was his treachery.
Where first, my lord?
Asked Bardan Devaro, chapter master of the Nova Marines.
Where first, indeed?
Gilliman crooked a giant finger. The gates of the hall opened, and a hololith emitter floating on a suspensor field was pushed in by a pair of chapter serfs. A quartet of Sisters of Silence bearing tall spears escorted it, each forming the corner of a hollow square around it. The machine was guided to a gentle stop not far from the table.
Before we came here, I had Tetrarch Felix lead an expedition to the palace spire of Hive Kreostos on Ardium, said Gilliman. I needed to know how my brother is affecting this plague of the dead, and how his demonic allies are able to cage themselves in false flesh so easily in the heart of our kingdom.
He paused.
There are certain writings that refer to an artifact known as the Hand of Darkness. I believed this device to be the cause.
We know of it, said Khalgar. It was taken by Abaddon centuries ago and used by him in the Gothic War. Some learned men say it allowed him to subvert the Blackstone fortresses in the Gothic sector. There is little else in our records.
It is an ancient device from eons before the first age of humanity in the stars, said Gilliman. He who possesses it can direct the energies of the warp easily and on a massive scale.
He paused again.
It has come to my knowledge that Mortarion has it, a gift from the Despoiler.
From which source do you know this? Asked Khalgar.
The Inari of the Eldari. They did not claim the device as theirs, but I suspect it was crafted by their forebears. They have an interest in knowing its whereabouts.
A murmur passed through the crowd. The Eldari had been instrumental in returning Rebute Gilliman to life, but they were Xenos and could not be trusted.
Peace, my people. I do not take their word at face value. It was one of many things their envoys revealed to me during my journey to Terra. They insisted that the dead walked at Abaddon's command across the galaxy because of some subversion of this device by Mortarion. When tidings of this new plague of the unliving, afflicting Ultramar reached me upon my crusade, it gave weight to their argument. The rebellions we have been suffering added to my conviction. They are a madness. And what is madness but a malady of the mind? Observe.
Sisters, activate the hololith. One of the Sisters of Silence turned the device on. It thrummed powerfully. Loop projectors glowed as the emitter set up a limited composition stream projection cone that glowed silver and white.
The sisters stand guard around this thing to shield you from its power, said Gilliman. Even an image of it has the potential to corrupt.
Combat feed taken by Felix's helm lenses took shape on the hololith, displaying the strange clock from the palace spire chapel.
Now, see, said Gilliman.
At a pass of his hand, a further layer was added to the image, a web of globular strands that overlaid one another and pulsed menacingly. They were such a dark green that they were almost black.
That does not look like how I imagined the Hand of Darkness, said Khalgar. I say that is not it. You are correct, Lord Khalgar, said Gilliman.
He was distracted, somewhat distant. In his troubled state, he unknowingly spoke down to the Lord of Macragge.
It is not the Hand of Darkness itself, but a device created by Mortarion using the Hand's power and knowledge he has prized from its workings. This network you see here is psychic in nature. It spreads all over Ardium and beyond, reaching from world to world where similar devices are located, aiding the armies of the Plague God. Go, Dissia Maxim, please.
Gilliman gestured to the Chapter Aurora Psyker. Maxim rose from his position among the assembled Space Marine leaders. He had come to the meeting bareheaded. Beneath the deep blue of his armored cowl was an old man who had seen enough evil to last several lifetimes. His snowy hair played host to cables burrowed into his scalp. Power shone in the whites of his eyes. They were caged by wrinkled skin, topped by a brow caught in the collapse of a frown that would never lift.
"I have felt this uncleanness too closely," said Maxim. "The touch of it pollutes my mind still. This machine dirtied the psychosphere of Ardium like sepsis in blood. Mortarion has created a psychic weapon that has our people turn against their rulers in the face of all sense, and the dead turn against the living. A net of corruption has been hung about Ultramar by the fallen Primarch. Mortarion draws it ever tighter. He sickens the realm in the same way he infects a single man with his phages."
"Lord Tigorius had sensed something of this," said Khalgar. "We had no idea of the scale of it."
"You did not," said Gilliman, neutrally.
"Mortarion's Legion was famed for its commitment to blunt assault and an obsession with staying power in the face of overwhelming enemy fire. They were crude strategies born of pride and costly. But he is capable of subtlety, and when he chooses the quiet game, he is at his most dangerous."
"It would explain why his movements have appeared so random," said Captain Torkos of the Howling Griffins. "If he were planting these devices..."
"Quite," said Gilliman. "My once brother made these things. He is installing them himself. He never did trust others. Consider how your defences have failed in the areas Mortarion has been seen. The capabilities the devices grant him concern me. If he can draw so directly upon the Empyrean in so many locales, other options might be open to him in addition to the creation of undead hordes and the poisoning of minds. The Cicatrix Maledictum's influence should be weak here in Ultramar, but I find it is not. Mortarion is the cause. The aid of his diseased master is always close to his hand. What is occurring on Ajax, for example, gives me great cause for worry. The demons were brought there somehow through this warp network derived from the Hand of Darkness."
"Then we should go to Ajax," said Khalgar.
"Not yet. The creatures there will be too powerful to overcome. First, I shall lead Imperial forces to Espandor. It was there that the war began. It is there that we shall begin the finishing of it."
The hololith shut off. A collective sigh of relief whispered from the mortal members of the quorum.
"Espandor lies closest to the Scourge Stars," continued Gilliman. "It is a corridor for war materiel, a conduit through the warp. Through that system, Mortarion's armies come, riding fast upon the Empyrean tides of this filth we saw upon Ardium."
Gilliman leaned back from the table, his eyes glinting with the prospect of revenge against his brother.
"By retaking the system, we will cut off Mortarion's ability to resupply his fleets. If we can locate these machines upon Espandor and disable them, the torrent of power sickening the soul of Ultramar can be closed off. His demon legions will struggle to remain manifest. The dead will not rise so easily. Once his mortal forces are isolated from one another, and we can be sure they will not be reinforced by uncanny means, then we might begin their piecemeal destruction. From what Captain Ventris told me at Raucus, the warriors of Espandor Prime still hold out, but their days are numbered. I say now is the moment to lend them the full strength of our armies and retake the system completely. I name this endeavour the Spear of Espandor. Let it be noted.
There was no discussion, no semblance of inviting debate. The Imperial Regent stated his intention, and it was accepted. The Space Marines in the hall would follow without question. Gilliman looked down at the map again.
I swear it shall be so, for all the people of Ultramar and the Imperium.